Okay. I want to move on a little bit today by finishing up the issue of negative attributes and the nature of God, but in particular focus on an interesting discussion relating to the names of God. Okay, and this is going to be, I think, a great example in my mind of what I consider to be the dual agenda of the Mor Nevuchim. Remember calling the first shiurim, I spoke about the fact that on the one hand, there's no doubt a clear, explicit agenda of the Rambam is reconciling, if you will, reason and revelation. Right? He talks about this is right, he's writing a letter to, and that's clear, and this is part of what's going on here. He's trying to explain to you what God is and what it might be. But as probably should be clear to you by now, right, there is this second agenda within the Mor Nevuchim, and I think it's really very, very, very explicit in the first chelek of the Mor Nevuchim, which is to combat the beliefs of Jews, both lay and scholarly, in his time period. Now, corporealism is obviously a clear example. Negative attributes, though, is relevant here, and I think that in terms of the names, we're going to see something very interesting, where you think that the Rambam is just trying to make certain philosophical points, and to a certain extent he is, but what's also clearly going on here is a polemic against contemporary belief and ritual practice. Okay? And here what's interesting is that the matter at hand isn't just a matter of, well, what the people believe is krum. Here, he's also concerned about their halachic performance, or the impact on ritual. Okay, so let's take a look inside. 160, did we discuss 160 last time? I think so. 160, I think I made reference to it, though. 160 is the Rambam, is sort of his final justification of negative attribute, the theory of negative theology, where the obvious question, remember 159 was, is saying, well, if you really can't know that much, well, how much better are you than someone else? And the Rambam gives us the answer, saying, no, when you know what you don't know, what you can't say, you know a lot more than those who are just ignoramuses. Now, in 160, the Rambam is sort of continuing that along those lines, and he gives a mashal of a ship. Okay, and he says, let me give you the following example. What he's really combating is as follows. When someone says, if I only talk about what God isn't, I'm just not there at all. This doesn't work. How does this work? And so he gives a model of a ship and says, well, let's say someone was trying to describe to you what a ship is. Okay? Assume that a man has acquired true knowledge regarding the existence of a ship, but does not know to what it is that this term is applied. Namely, was applied to a substance or an accident, and then he knows it's a... et cetera, et cetera. It goes on. And basically says, listen, over time, as you begin to explain to the person, well, it's not spherical, and it's not equal on all sides, and you go all sorts of descriptions of it, over time, you'll ultimately get to the image, loosely speaking, of a ship. Okay? Now, this, for the Rambam, is his way of basically saying, okay, well, we can do the same thing with regard to God. Whereas the more and more we say what God isn't, we get to some form of picture of what he is. Now, if I would keep on describing to you with regard to a ship, right, all the things that a ship isn't, would I really end up with a picture of the ship in my mind?
It's very hard because we already have a picture of what a ship is.
Right, well, it's hard for us to imagine that, right? I'm saying, but... In other words, it's not the notion of that knowledge is not perfect. And the Rambam says, yeah, okay. But it's something. And it's substantial. And it's a lot more than the person who just has an infinite number of possibilities of what a ship might be.
And every image might be different.
Sorry?
Between person to person.
Mm?
Every image would probably be very different.
Right, but the more and more you eliminate certain possibilities, the narrower it becomes.
How many negative attributes does the Rambam say God is not? How long is that list of things? Except for God does not have a body, what else is there?
Oh, there's a whole slew of things. Remember, not only that God has no body, but what we say, remember, every type of perfection, You say that God has no lack of knowledge. God has no lack of power. There's a whole slew, yeah. Meaning, after a while, this interesting question is, well, how far do you have to go before we get to what our image of what God is? And that's interesting. I'm trying to think of a text in the Rambam if he engages in that or not, whether he would or not. That is interesting to think about. Because obviously some key points of what he wants to get at. Okay.
But wouldn't it be much easier to describe the ship in the positive attributes than saying what it has?
Sure, it would be. Yeah, no, but in the case of a ship, you can do that. In God, you can't. Mm-hmm. Right? No. Oh, I don't know. He's just giving it a mashal to explain that you can get some. Remember, the 5960 is basically responding to the following point. If you say all I can say about God is what I don't know, what God does, excuse me, what God is not, then what better is that the knowledgeable person than the person who is an ignoramus? Now, the Rambam is defending that by saying he's very knowledgeable, relatively speaking, meaning there is a greater amount of knowledge. It's just limited. But like I said, there are many who read the Rambam here in a sort of, you know, in a manner which basically says the limits of human knowledge are really tremendous. Tremendous here. Leaving us to the question of whether or not how far human knowledge gets us. Right? I mean, there is just a certain amount of direct limits to human knowledge here, and the Rambam is very clear about that. Now, one other interesting thing about 160 is the Rambam sort of ends this with a classic Rambam zinger, which is to say as follows. Remember, the Rambam is very emphatic that a person who believes in God's corporeal reality, as firm as they might be, who might have been led astray because he was learning Tanakh, whoever it is, right? He's not Picaris. Or Kalifer means different classification than he is, right? There's this person, accidental as it might be, and unintentional. Now, here the Rambam in 160 says something not as strong, because I think he gets it that the negative theology is difficult to comprehend, but he basically says as follows. I should not say that he who affirms that God has positive attributes either falls short of apprehending him, or is an associate or has an apprehension that is different from what he really is. In other words, I'm not saying he's an Ovid of Odazar. But I shall say that he has abolished his belief in the existence of the deity without being aware of it.
Wow.
Meaning as follows.
He's not quite got what Hashem is.
What? He's not as bad as the guy who believes in God's corporeal reality. But he's making a fundamental mistake to the point that the God he actually believes in is what God is. It's just a different degree of a mistake, it seems like. I mean, it's a little bit unclear of a line here. Meaning, it's clear that he doesn't think that it's like you're Ovid of Avodah Zarah in that regard. But no. Remember, Rambam doesn't have shogig mezid in your emunos. You're on or you're off. Meaning, shogig mezid is irrelevant. Remember, we discussed this notion of kfir b'shogig. Rambam doesn't care if you're kofir b'shogig. You're wrong. Kofir is a kofir. Meaning, in the sense of the following sense, you don't believe. So you just, you believe in something wrong when you don't believe in God. And this is his point. He's very emphatic, the Rambam, about this. The Rambam is unforgiving. And so that's what he says in 160. Now, here in 161, this is what I want to focus on today, the Rambam begins to address what clearly might lead people to give attributes to God. Right? I mean, we saw that the number one kicker should be the Yudgim Amido, right? Rambam has a response for it. It's talking about God's actions. Right? But the multiplicity of God's names, right, is meant to seemingly indicate different qualities of God, one could say. I mean, that's sort of intuitive in many ways. And by the way, if you look at various Svarim, you know, Sefer Machshava, whatever it might be, who attribute different meanings to different names of God.
All the Siddurei Kabbalah is what they are.
Okay, so here's what we're getting to here, okay? Now, if you read this book, the Mor Nebuchim, and don't realize, all these like secrets of the Hebrew alphabet books out there, whatever it might be, okay? And various names of God. He's right now addressing, for the beginning, the names we know. Shem Hashem, Elohim, Shakai, right? All these other things. So is that there? Is that 161 is not going to where you're going yet. But here the Rambam needs to really address this issue. Right? So it feels like he's addressing the issue of, what is my name? Okay. Now, of course, there is a point in the Torah where God is asked, who are you? And what does God say? Right? What does he say? Yeah, right? Now, the Rambam likes that chapter very much. And take a look at 163. What is the true meaning of Eyeh Asher Eyeh? Eyeh Asher Eyeh is the rational, intellectual proofs of God's existence that makes it clear that his existence not through existence. Meaning, it's precisely the Mor Nebuchim. Okay? Eyeh Asher Eyeh is a demonstration that it proves that God is a different type of existence altogether. That's precisely what Eyeh Asher Eyeh is. And the proof that then he has to provide to Bnei Yisrael is basically to say, okay, now that we know that God exists, we need to know something else. Namely, how do we know he sent you? Okay? But for the Rambam in 163, Eyeh Asher Eyeh is precisely God saying, I am what I am. What is it, I am what I am? I am, I exist, in a manner that I don't exist. I mean, because I'm not a created entity. Okay? Then there's the whole thing about the nature of hey, you'd hey.
I always thought of hey, yeah, sure, yeah, it's like, let it be, I'll never understand. Like, it is what it is.
Well, you could say the Rambam agrees with you with that. Because it just meaning, that's precisely the point. Meaning, on the one hand, he's saying, I am what I am in the sense of, you can only know so much, and then let it be. And we saw, the Rambam also interprets the story of Moshe, you know, seeing the back of the rock right after golden calf, right? That whole story as well. Shemot was a Lambed, Lama Gimel, right? The Rambam has that interpretation of it as well. I mean, any time there are visions of God in the Torah, or you know, Maisa Merkava, of course, right, and the burning bush, and all sorts of other things, right? What is all of that? That's all proving precisely negative theology. It works out very well for the Rambam. I don't mean it's a cynical man. I mean that's part of who he is, and that's how he believes, and I think he believes very generally, right?
It all comes down to how you interpret the verse. The Rambam could have easily just had an agenda and interpreted this verse to fit into his agenda, which could make sense, objectively speaking. One could say what Gideon said, which you said relates to the Rambam. You could say it explains it as something entirely different.
Yeah, no, I'm saying,
so
I mean,
how's that a support for?
Well,
I guess it comes down to the objective, the question fundamentally. If you can interpret any verse objectively,
right. Obviously, I mean, there's a sort of chicken and egg question here, and which came first, is theology or is interpretation of the Torah?
It's like
and
when the homily was, once you've seen the pasuk, you've interpreted it because you're seeing it through your own eyes. It's your own commentary.
Right, okay, so it's always this classic question about the relationship here. Right, someone put it, I don't know how to put it here, but I mean, in the Rambam's worldview, right, I think the Rambam is very genuine in believing that this is what the Torah means. Right, I'm not, there are those who are cynical about it. I'm not cynical about this. I think the Rambam thinks it interprets the Torah in this manner, because he doesn't believe in the division between reason and revelation, and he thinks it goes very well. But obviously, the fact that people of other theological worldview are going to interpret these psukim differently is Pashut. Pashut. And we've seen it many, many times throughout the Mor Nevuchim, right, in terms of how they interpret all sorts of psukim. Okay. So that's in 163. In 164, by the way, he goes and tells you that anytime there's a notion of kavod, the glory, kavod Hashem, right? What is that referring to? That's just a created light that God causes to descend in a particular place in order to confer an honor upon it in a miraculous way. Meaning, it's nothing more than some temporary light that God makes. But don't think that there's some form of immanence of God, some physical presence, whatever it might be, right? Classic type of Rambam stuff. And of course, the notion of kavod and other writers, whether it's Yehuda or Levi or a Kabbalist or it might be, you can take on all different types of connotations, and the Rambam doesn't have it. It's just a temporary light, and that's it. Okay. So this is 161, and 160, and 163, 164. Now here in 161, 162, he sort of, you could have skipped these, right? But he wants to get to the names, but he goes on a tangent from the names. And here he gets into something that, you know, I find very fascinating. He starts off by saying, listen, we have names of God. What are the names of God? So all the names of God that are out there are just referring to his actions. But you can't say that about one name of God, namely Yukevavke, right? Shema Mufurash. Okay? Now,
why can't, because it doesn't describe an action?
Or? Yeah, right? Okay. Now, that seems to be a proper name, which is getting to the essence of God. Okay? And here, the Rambam is very interesting. He basically says as follows. Listen, the way we pronounce the name is what? Ad Hashem, right? Now, that is referring to his actions. There's a significance. Okay? And as for that name, I'm on page 148 in the Penis version here, as for the name that, if pronounced, is composed of Yud Hey Vav Hey, no commonly accepted derivation is known none other than his partner. There can be no doubt about the fact that this great name, which as you know is not pronounced except in the Mikdash, right? But the Kohanim and Birkas Kohanim, is indicative of a notion with reference to which there is no association between God and what is other than he. Perhaps indicates the notion of a necessary existence, according to the Hebrew language, of which we today know only a very scant portion, also with regard to its pronunciation. Generally speaking, the greatness of this name and the prohibition against pronouncing it are due to its being indicative of the essence of him, may be exalted, in such a way that none of the created things is associated with him in this indication. What's the Rambam saying? Hashem Mufurash is used in a very unique context. It pronounced, excuse me, in a very unique context. It might, in the old Hebrew, which might be a lost tradition, make reference to God being of a necessary existence, which is exactly how the Rambam sort of defines God, right? And the fact that we don't know how to pronounce the name and don't know, furthermore, what? The meaning of the words might be precisely his point. Namely, all we know about God is this entity, but we don't know that much about him. Yeah. What did I say? No. 1 second. There, that's a reference to, in terms of the interpretation of how what we interpretation we give to it, based upon the way we pronounce it. Okay, but the Rambam is getting somebody else. What is this name, which we pronounce differently than it's spelled? Yeah. So the Rambam basically says here is that, well, this is a name which might refer to some form of his necessary existence. Maybe, which is interesting that it just basically says this is the entity that has to exist in the world. Okay? But anything more beyond that to say about this entity, God, right? We don't know anything about what the name might indicate. Which, of course, works very well for him because that's exactly what he thinks about God as a whole. Now, the Rambam basically then goes and says, listen, The problem with names is that names lead to all sorts of imaginations. Because when you start saying names, says God, this name means this and that name is that, it makes people have all sorts of connotations about God, start thinking in positive attributes, whatever it might be. And this is precisely what Rabbi Chanina warned us about God's names. When Rabbi Chanina said, you cannot add anything to the Amida. Okay? In other words, there is a real danger of directing based on an action of God towards of thinking with his name of God's essence, but avoid that danger. Okay? Now, what the Rambam is really bothered by is as follows. He's grappling with a serious issue. And this is an issue that's sort of been hovering over the Mor Nevuchim in all of Chelek Aleph. Language is a problem for religion in the Rambam. Language causes all sorts of problems because you need it. You need to be able to talk about your religion. You need to talk about God. But it can lead you to Avodah Zarah. You need names. You need to be referred to the big guy up there. What would the Rambam think of us calling the big guy up there? And that'd be,
Straight fear.
What'd you say?
Straight fear in his eyes.
Oh, meaning it's like, wow, you're like just like running into the problems here. Now, there might be, some of these names might be more or less saying he's the big man above. But the Rambam won't like those colloquialisms, right? And this is precisely what the essential problem of languages is that you need to refer to God by names. You need to pray. But all this language can lead people astray. And now we get very interesting. Because now the Rambam gets into two very interesting phenomena. The first is the issue of kamiot, amulets. And the second is those names of God of like crazy numbers of letters. You might have seen them on like your siddur sometimes. Not only Sfar, I'm saying. Yom Kippur. Scans with your eyes. What is that all about, right? What do you say? So, what are the... Yes, some of them are. Or many of them are. But there's all these Mesorahs out there. Well, what are those also, right? I mean, those don't seem to be a description of the 10 separate intellects of Aristotle. What'd I say?
I don't think they were.
Yeah. I don't think so either. Okay? Now, here the Rambam stoops in here. Okay? This whole tirade against amulets. So look what he says in 161. Do not think anything other than this, and do not let it occur to your mind the vain imaginings of the writers of charms. The Arabic here is kamiyot, right? It's precisely that. Holy names. Or what names you may hear from them or may find in their stupid books, names that they have invented, which are not indicative of any notion whatsoever, but they call the names in which they think that necessary holiness and purity and work miracles. All these are stories that is not seemly for a perfect man to listen to, much less to believe. So we'll get to the Gemara and Shabbos here, 1 second. And the Rambam just goes on this like little bit of a tirade here, and basically, listen, there's one name of God, that's a Shem Mefurash. We don't speak about it. We don't write it. Zero. No more names. Now, you might also be familiar with the fact that in Perek Chamishi of Hilchot Tefillin, the Rambam writes in Halacha Dalet, he says, "Aminag Poshish Kotvim HaMezuzah B'Bechutz K'neged HaRevach Sheben Parsha Parsha Shakai V'em Zeh Hefzeh L'Fishu B'Bechutz." That doesn't explain what this Aminag Poshit is. You ever thought about what is that all about? What is that minhag? But aval elu shekotvim bibefnim shemot hamalachim ashemot kedoshim v'posim chotemet harei hem mechlal mi she'en lo en lehem chelek olam haba she'elu hatipshim lo dai lehem shebitlu mitzvah ela she'asu mitzvah gedola sheyuchud Hashem v'shal kadosh baruch hu v'avato v'tov ke'elu hi kemia shel hanayat atzman. Okay, this is very interesting. What's the Rambam's tirade here? What are people doing, right, when they write these kamiyas? They're taking the name of God. And taking a mitzvah that's supposed to proclaim the presence of God, and what are they doing?
Using
it for their own manipulation. It's power. It's magic. Now, take a look at the Hagos of Ammonios. Okay? You'll see... Oh, wait. Is this version I have what I'm looking for? So take a look as follows. Perek Hey, Halacha Dal, and Hilchot Tefillin. 5-4. Okay? So he says, and listen... V'chen ketav v'sever mitzvahs mishmo, v'chen legi harav, v'moyshe ben harav. Yeshua shemoreinu, harav avigdor ha-kohen zetzal, enig b'chol eretz oistrach. Sheluch tov mezuzah lo l'chotem ala malach, rak shtei parashah k'shem k'tubot lo l'asif afilo ot achat. Okay, that's fine. Udelo kere'em, asher ketav tzuret mezuzah v'chotmo v'shemo malachim. Amnom ketav sh'im hen lo iku v'lo mitzvah, ach tosefet shmira. Right? He quotes precisely those who say, you throw in a little bit of malachim here, a couple names there, and what do you get? More shmira. V'chein. Something here, Asher Rabbeinu Simcha, Ketav Gim Psuchim Tachem Mezuzah, Hashem Yishmorcha, etc., etc. You see, right here, on the Rambam's page, and the Rambam probably wanted you to, like, you know, rip out this page of the Hagos of Ammonios. They put it in the Sefer of the Rambam. It's the whole thing enough that they do it. That they record the Minhag Ashkenaz. Right? It's clear the Rambam knows very well, both in now in the right in the Mishnah Torah and the Mora. And here you see that relationship here, where people are using names of God for all sorts of purposes, giving all sorts of meanings, and he thinks that people who do this don't have a Chel Olam Haba. So.
Wouldn't have been
fun
with the
Baal Shem. No. The whole notion of Baal Shem. Baal Shem is the most famous of which there are many other Baal Shem. Right, so, and what's interesting, and this has been documented very well by a number of people, there's actually a small monograph on the topic of somebody, Professor Mark Shapiro, but there are others as well have talked about this, is that the Rambam and many halachot throughout the Mishnah Torah removes, gets rid of, somehow reinterprets, whoever it might be, many passages in Shas, other things that refer to doing things with angels, as we talked in previous weeks, and demons, and amulets, akmiyos, right, and all sorts of other things. Ayin haras, right, he reinterprets Gemaras, the Gemara gives two interpretations, he chooses one interpretation, whoever it might be. Now, one of the famous exceptions to this rule relates precisely to Gemaras. And the Rambam's got a problem. What's the problem? The Gemara in Shabbos tells us things you're allowed to hotzah, right? Do whatever it might be. And one of those things are what?
An amulet that works. An amulet that's proven to work is one of them.
Right, correct. So, now this is a little bit of a problem because there are two ways of interpreting things differently. In other words, the Rambam here, there are two issues here. One is the issue of hotzah, one is the issue of refuah. So the Rambam assumes that anything which actually works, right, isn't a kamiya. That's just medicine. Right? Now the problem is that there are many people who would agree with that distinction. Well, what works and what doesn't work? Again, they're not using labs here, right? So for example, the Rosh will say, you might be right that the distinction between kamiya and refuah is what works doesn't work, but a lot of these things work. So that can't be a vodazara. That can't be problematic. So then the definition becomes of what is a Avodah Zarah? Anything that's the Rambam thinks doesn't work. Again, it's a problematic definition. Okay, but the Rambam also does allow for Hotzah with Kamiyot. And the question then is why? Why should that be? If it's not an efficacious Refuah, why should this be allowed? And I think the answer which is given, which I think is actually a fairly good answer, is to say that the Rambam believes in the phenomenon, which is known in Halacha and other places as well, of yishuv adat, of a chola. Right? In other words, that which can have a placebo effect, that which can have a calming effect, has value to it. And if a person in their tipshut wants to use a kamiya, so they don't violate the isra hotzah with the kamiya. They just might be idiots, so they don't have a chegolam haba. But that's something different, right? In other words, that's something entirely separate matter. Which I think is a perfectly good explanation, though I admit that, you know, you would like to see the Rambam say, you know, something else based on his theory.
Is it by magic in the Avodah Zarah, like the, is it Lochesh al-Amakal, that it's Yishuf Hadas b'chala, even though it doesn't...
There are many. There are a couple other examples of this. Yes, correct. Right. That's the one of the proofs. Like that's what, one of the other notions of Yishuv Adah.
Right.
Now, but again, the Rambam has to deal with this a number of different places. It's clear that in Shas, there's references to demons a number of places. Ayin Hara is out there. There are several similar phenomena along these lines. And the Rambam hates this stuff. And he's got to deal with it. Okay? What's interesting here is that this is one of these cases where I think it's very clear. Rambam's philosophy intersects with the way he interprets halacha. In other places, you know, it's hard, speculative, it's hard to know, maybe the contradictory might be. But here's one of those cases where I think the Rambam is very clear. He wants to cleanse the Jewish people and their rituals of this Avodah Zarah, or Darchim, or whatever it might be in his mind. Okay. Now, the other interesting thing it gets to in 162 relates to the other names of God. Okay, and what do I mean by the other big names of God? So he says, listen, we know in Birkas Kohanim we have this notion of them pronouncing the Shem Mefurash, which doesn't happen today, but happened back then, Mikdash, whatever it might be. And it says, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, right, that they're very careful about who they teach it to and how it's pronounced, or if it might be. Okay? Now, all this is very good for the Rambam, by the way, because he just interprets the saying that, you know, these are esoteric matters, and if it might be, and we many matters of knowledge of God have to be kept esoteric, which is a shitato, right? It's worthy shitoso, right? It works out very nicely for the Rambam. Of course, the Rambam knows very well that he's also undermining other traditions who interpret those Gemaras and those spirits, whoever it might be, who have different understandings of what God is. And then he gets into these issues of, well, what are those 12-letter names, or the 42-letter names, or whatever it might be. So here, the Rambam says as follows. I mean, the Rambam basically says, now, he knows about this now because it's out there, but it's also because the Shas makes mention of these things. And here the Rambam says, listen, there's no name word that's 72 letters, 42 letters, whatever it is. This is clearly a combination of names, which might have been indicative about some of the relation to the Sodei, the Sodei HaTorah, right, the seat mysteries of the Torah, which have been lost in terms of their knowledge and are always meant to be kept secret. But there's no power or anything else meaningful in the pronunciation of these letters. Right? What is the Rambam trying to combat? Well, anytime you hear these notions of saying, well, you have certain names of God, they're pronounced, or might be they're unique names of God, they're hidden names of God, they aren't found in the Torah, whatever it might be, what might you end up having? Names, twofold, and they either refer to some form of essence of God, or alternatively, which are, if pronounced, can become sort of some magic formula, whatever it might be, to impact God or the world or whatever else it is. Right? And the Rambam says, no, this is false. These names, we don't know what they mean. They're not one name. It's a combination of words. And there's no power or anything else beyond that special about its pronunciation. And certainly none of them were anything greater than the Shem HaMefurash, which is the name we know from the Torah. Now, what I like about these passages in the Mora is I think this is a great example of what you see is that the Rambam knows very well that there are people who make a big deal of the names of gods for Kamiya purposes and for talking about the nature of God purposes, what it might be. And the Rambam wants to combat both of them. He wants to come at both of them because for philosophical reasons. He doesn't want people to think they can get to understanding the essence of God. And he wants to combat them as well for halachic reasons, which is really just the other side of the same coin here, because he doesn't want people playing around in their ritual with ideas which ultimately, if they aren't Avodah Zarah, can certainly lead to Avodah Zarah and are problematic for those purposes. Questions? Okay, so you see here the Rambam, and again, there are many other manifestations of this, but I think...
He just has, like, no problem rejecting huge quantities of, like, material and midrashim. That, say, there's, like, someone like, you know, Rashi brings a midrashim of the word okay, meaning Hashem is merciful.
No, meaning the Rambam has no problem saying that there are names of God. There's clearly different names of God.
Yeah.
But those are all references to God's actions, he says.
Okay.
No, the Rambam has no problem with that. I mean, he has to deal with that because it might sound like it's talking about God's essence or, you know, describing qualities of God. And the Rambam says, no, we can't talk about it that way. We can only talk about God in terms of his attributes. Excuse me, in terms of his actions. Sorry.
He has no problem, like, rejecting huge quantities of, like, I'm all right. Bring stories
well,
of demons.
Right. Oh, in terms of that stuff. You know, well, yeah, there's a matter of interpretation. You interpret one way, you interpret another way. But here, in this regard, I do think with some of those issues, like interpreting, you know, Gemaras, and that might refer to the power of magic or kamiot or demons, or it might be, here, I think the Rambam knows very well that he's being selective in what he chooses to adopt from Chazal. I mean, he tells us in other places as well he's going to do that, right? He's told us in the introduction to Moruchim, the different Gadatot that we can reject, their theological reasons, their Gadatot that have philosophical mistakes in it, whatever it might be. So there, I don't think it's a cynical thing, but I think the Rambam is very consciously understanding that he's interpreting Maimri Chazal or selecting Maimri Chazal in a manner that fits with him as a broader philosophy, which is what he thinks is the Amito Shotor. Okay? All right. So this will end sort of our negative theology section, but I think it's sort of its own entity, its own right. The names of God and amulets and magic, whatever it might be, which is very important to contemplate. Okay, pull it in here.